If you're a grandparent who wants to help create long-lasting family bonds, don't miss today's Building Relationships with Dr. Gary Chapman.
Many times I felt raising my kids, oh no, I've ruined this child, or I've ruined this grandchild. And it's really important to remember that our ability to ruin our child is not nearly as great as God's power to redeem him. And our God takes the little seeds that are being sown, and he's the one that nurtures them.
Welcome to Building Relationships with Dr. Gary Chapman, author of the New York Times bestseller, The Five Love Languages. Today, speaker and parenting expert Susan Yates provides practical help on planning an unforgettable family event.
Our featured resource today is Susan's book, Cousin Camp, A Grandparent's Guide to Creating Fun, Faith, and Memories That Last. You can find out more at fivelovelanguages.com. Gary, I know you're involved in your grandchildren's lives, and they have enriched yours, haven't they?
Well, they have for sure, Chris. We only have two. You know, I have friends who have, you know, 8, 9, 10. I'm saying, how do you do this? But you know what's been very interesting? In fact, when I saw the title of this book, I thought, hey, this is great, because the other grandparents of my grandchildren have through the years, when they, especially when they were younger, the grandfather is now in heaven, but they did cousin camps, and at their place in South Carolina on a lake, you know, and the kids love it. They still have tremendous memories of that. So I said, man, I'm excited about this. A book on it. It's going to help people do this. So, I'm excited about this, Chris.
Well, let me introduce Susan Alexander Yates. She's a popular speaker, author of a number of books, including And Then I Had Kids and Then I Had Teenagers, a regular guest on Family Life Today and other national radio programs. She lives with her husband, John, in Falls Church, Virginia, and you'll find her latest, Cousin Camp, at fivelovelanguages.com.
Well, Susan, welcome to Building Relationships.
Oh, thanks so much for having me. I've been looking forward to this.
Now, you and John have been married 50 years, I understand. So before we talk about grandparenting, how did the two of you make it for 5 decades?
That's a great question. Lots of grace and lots of forgiveness.
Grace and forgiveness.
Grace and forgiveness. And really, the bottom line, Gary, is, as both you and Chris know, is a commitment to the covenant. When we said I do, we said it for better, for worse, in sickness and in health. And, you know, I actually remember during our first year of marriage, one of our first fights. I don't know if you all remember yours, but I remember one of our first arguments. And I said to my husband, well, maybe we should never have gotten married in the first place. Now, My husband is very even-tempered, and he doesn't get real angry. He's just Mr. Stable. But he looked at me with fire in his eyes, and he said, Susan, don't you ever say that again. We are married, period. And we will work this argument out and the rest of them. And You know what that did? That gave me a sense of security. And It gave me just a sense, we're committed to this for the long haul. And So I was too afraid. I never did say that again. You scared me so badly. But, you know, over the years, we have also seen the importance of forgiveness. I can't tell you how many times I have had, and this works with the whole family, by the way, but I have had to go to my husband or one of my children and say, you know, I shouldn't have said what I did or done what I did, and I need to ask you to forgive me. I can't remember a single time when I felt like doing that, and I would much rather have said, but if you had or but if you hadn't. Yeah. God calls us to go to one another asking for forgiveness, not out of feelings, but out of obedience. Yeah. And once we do that, God can begin to heal. And healing takes time, and trust takes time to be restored. It's not instantaneous. But The asking of and granting of forgiveness needs to be immediate in order to open the door to what God can do in the relationship.
Yeah. Well, I hope every married couple that's listening is hearing what you're saying, because that whole concept of covenant, we made a covenant, we're going to find out, God's going to help us work this out, and the whole thing about apologizing, forgiving. I mean, I fully agree. So, so essential in a long-term healthy marriage. Well, you have 5 children and 21 grandchildren. Did you plan on having this many grandchildren?
Goodness gracious, no. I remember when I was in high school with a little gang that I ran around with, I was sort of the least likely to get married and have kids. I was a total tomboy and was not very interested in family life. I was the eldest of four children, and I didn't really like my siblings very much. Praise God for wise parents. But so I never expected this. But, you know, this is where God knows us better than we know ourselves. And he knows what he created me for. So I married my best friend from college, and we had five kids. We actually had five children in 7 years. Number four turned out to be twins, surprisingly. Ooh. So that ran up our household into total craziness pretty quickly. And today, all of our children are married. They're all adults. They're all married. And we do have 21 grandchildren.
You have a big cousin camp when you get together.
We do.
Now, a lot of young couples today are looking at, you know, what's going on in the world, and they're just thinking, you know, why should I bring kids into a world like this? What would you say to them?
You know, that's a good question. It's also a really hard question because I have kids, and I know the blessings that they have brought into my life. But one of the things that I think folks need to consider is you may think you don't want kids right now when you're young, but when you get to be 40, 50, 60, you will see it from a very different perspective. One of the things that children do is they reveal to us the power of love. I think when you hold that first child of yours, whether it's you gave that child birth or whether it's through adoption or fostering, God pours his love into you, and you could just not imagine what that's like. You guys know this. And that gives us a teeny little, very imperfect picture of the love of God. So I think what our children give to us is an imperfect picture of our Heavenly Father's love for us. Another thing that kids do for us is they thrust us to be dependent on the Lord. I mean, we have no clue what we're doing in raising children, and that drives us back to the Lord over and over again. And while that may feel awkward, we are independent people. We don't like to be dependent. But one of the things that God loves the most is when we come to him and simply say, help. So if you want to grow in your relationship with the Lord, having kids is a great way to do it. God doesn't call everybody to be married, nor to have children. Marriage and family is not a higher elevation. We have so many single friends that are doing amazing things. So I just want to put that little disclaimer in there. But yeah. I would encourage young couples to really think long-term and think of the blessing that they can get by pouring their lives into little people.
Yeah, I certainly concur with that. You know, John said in his little book in the New Testament, I have no greater joy than to hear that my children walk in truth. And when you see them grow up and following God, wow, it's worth everything you invested in their lives.
Oh, you're so right.
Well, let's talk about Cousin Camp. How did you get this idea?
Well, that's a great question, too. When we started having our own children, we began to pray right then that they would come to know the Lord at a young age. We began to pray that if God called them to marriage, that they would marry someone who loved the Lord. And we also, Gary, began to pray that God would bless the parents who are raising our possible future spouses of our children. And that was fun one day to finally meet those parents. And I prayed that prayer because I was secretly hoping somebody was praying for me as I was raising my kids to marry into their family. But our family vision, Cousin Camp really began with our own children and our own family vision, which is very simple. It's based on the great commandments, the first two, to love the Lord your God with all your heart, mind, and soul, and your neighbor as yourself. And when I think about the practical walking out of those commandments, when we think about family, our neighbor, our closest neighbors are those we live with. The order should be our spouse comes first and then our children. And then as the kids grow up, that branches out to extended families. Now, yes, we have close friends outside of our family, and we desperately need those, but that's a topic for another time. But our vision for raising our kids and our grandkids has been that they would love the Lord and love one another. So as the grandchildren began to come, Johnny and I began to think about, okay, how can we help this happen in the next generation? Well, you know, the most obvious thing is praying for not only our children but our grandchildren. But then setting aside a time when we could get together as grandparents with our grandchildren without the parents. And one of the things that we hoped for was that our grandchildren know each other and love each other. And this can be hard because probably many of our listeners are spread out, as we are. We have one family in Virginia close to us. We have another one in Virginia a little bit further. We have two in Tennessee and one in North Carolina. So our grandkids are spread out. They don't live near each other. So we decided to start a cousin camp in which each summer we would bring together the cousins. Now, for our particular camp, we said you have to be 4 years old to come because we didn't want to deal with kids up all night, kids wetting the bed, kids crying because they needed mama. We wanted them to be somewhat obedient. Also, that makes it more fun for the older ones. So we didn't want to deal with toddlers. Plus, we were having so many. Now, I tell a lot of stories in my book of people who do it differently, and they have little people. So let me quickly say there's not one way to do this. You have to do what's best for your family. But for our family, it seemed best to say the beginning age is 4 years old. So for our first camp, we had five children from three different families. We had, I believe we had 2 4-year-olds, a 6-year-old, a 7-year-old, and maybe an 8-year-old. And our kids' cousins come in for 3 nights and 4 days. The parents drop them off, and the parents leave. And the parents are thrilled to do that. And we're thrilled to have time alone with the grandkids without the parents. So our first year, it began with just 5 children. And then as more grandkids were born, it increased. And we have actually done this for 11 years now. Mm. And the last 3 years, we have had all 21 of our grandchildren attend camp.
Wow. Well, I'm excited about talking about this, and I know a lot of grandparents are excited about hearing it.
Susan, before we get back into the conversation, I have to ask you about all we've been through with COVID-19, with older Americans and the questions of, you know, younger people of maybe infecting and all of that. We don't know exactly what's going to be going on as here at the end of June with everything in society, but you've thought a lot about that, haven't you?
Oh, yes, I have, because, you know, right now, as I love to talk about cousin camp and family reunions, but the reality is that so many people are just trying, especially mothers of young children, are just trying to get through the day. They can't think 2 weeks, 2 months out. They're just trying to make it through the day. So actually, just recently, I developed a brand new resource. It's a free ebook called Camp at Home, 100 Practical Ideas for Families. And in this ebook, which is available at my website or available through 5 Love Languages for free, there are ideas that are taken and principles that are taken right out of the Cousin Camp book, but applied to your situation if you are at home and need a plan for, oh my goodness, help, Susan, I've got toddlers, I've got teenagers, I'm going crazy. What can I do this week? This book is for you.
That's great. I'm glad you did that because I think a lot of parents are asking, and during the summer months, they're going to really be asking, what do I do?
That's right.
So that's super. Well, you shared in our first segment the idea of Cousin Camp, bringing the kids together without their parents for 3 days and 4 days and 3 nights. But an idea is not enough. You got to have a plan. So talk about the first steps in what to do in putting together something like this?
Well, the first thing to do is to sit down with your husband, if you're married, or your wife, if you're the husband, and just decide, is this something we want to do? Is this a way that God might be calling us to build relationships amongst our kids and grandkids? And then you just have to just pick a date. The hardest thing is to pick a date. And it's important to interact with your own children. We always do it in June, when the last set of schools are out and our kids get out of school at different times. And the reason we do June is because we don't want to be cooped up with kids inside in bad weather in December or January, or Thanksgiving even, which is unpredictable. But other people choose other times. We have friends who've done it over Labor Day. We have friends who've done it around the holidays. So again, figure out what date will work for you and your extended family, and that involves talking to your children. And then decide how many days. I suggest you start small. As I mentioned earlier, we have our cousins camp for 3 nights and 4 days, and then we follow that with a family camp for 4 more days. because once we get the different people here, it's easier to have kind of a family reunion. And that's a whole different section in the book where I talk about how to do a larger extended family reunion. But first things first, pick a date, talk to your kids, have them buy in, figure out how you're going to get people to you, where you're going to have it. And again, camping can be held anywhere. We happen to have a very small farm, so we have ours at our farm, but I have friends who have theirs in a city house, others who have theirs in a condo. You learn to use what's around you for activities during your camp. So you can really have camp anywhere, and it doesn't have to be fancy. It can be very simple. And then you begin to sketch out a schedule to pray That's the most important thing. I always ask right before camp. I don't do this initially, but right before camp starts, once the plans are made and the kids are getting ready to come, I have 4 or 5 girlfriends that I ask to be my prayer warriors for that week because I need prayer. My husband John needs prayer. And so you need a prayer team. Another thing that we do is we have learned, and this really, it helps you grow in your marriage because what you have to do is you have to play to each other's strengths. So you have to figure out who does what in terms of the responsibilities and getting ready for camp. My husband has been a full-time senior pastor for 40 years, so it's been really, he's been busy. I have had more time. I am the creative one. He's Mr. Stable. So we figure out who does what. I generally make the plans, but then he's the one that's up front with most of the leadership. He leads the Bible studies. He leads a lot of the things. But I give him the stuff to lead with. So the important thing is there's going to be a tendency, because you're both going to get tired, to get really cranky with one another. And instead of being cranky with one another, we have, in the preparation and also during camp, to grant extra grace to one another. And that's why it helps to figure out, okay, let's play to each other's strengths. Who would be the best to do this? So those are just the first steps.
Yeah, I like it. I can just hear parents who are listening saying, ooh, I wish the grandparents of my children would hear this. They like that idea. So you talk about 3 columns that you use to start the planning process. What are those?
Yeah, well, you know, this is a very interesting philosophical look at how we plan events generally, whatever type of event we're planning. I think just as humans, our general nature is to plan an event. Who's going to bring what the schedule's going to be, and we just plan the event, and then we cheer when it's over. And so often we fail to look at the needs of the people coming to the event and the goals that we want to have. What do we want to have happen as a result of having this event? That's a very good question to ask for any planning. So one of the things that we do is we write down the names of each of the children coming. And we think through their needs in 5 areas of growth: spiritual, physical, emotional, mental, and social. Now, some of these overlap, and so don't get too overwhelmed, but it's a filter to help us think through. And so we write down these needs. For example, let me get really specific for you. Sloan is age 4, and she's coming to camp for her first year. She's one of our youngest campers. She does not even know the names or the faces of all of her cousins because there's so many. Hmm. One of her emotional needs is that she's going to feel secure and that she's going to feel like she knows some people. So I have her mom print out a photograph of the last time the families were together, or even of individual families, and begin to teach her the names of her cousins before she even gets to camp. She'll also have the emotional need of feeling a little insecure because she's a newbie. We call the first-timers newbies. And so we always have our first-time campers sleep with their siblings because that gives them a sense of security. Now, we don't have a big place. We sleep kids on floors, even in closets. One of the favorite places to sleep is 3 cousins in a closet. It's sort of like their own little cave. These are girl cousins. The philosophy on this is your program grows out of the needs of the people coming. And as the kids get older, the needs change. In fact, the needs change every year. So Davy, he's 10. One of his needs is he's the youngest in a family of 5. And he really needs a break from his older brothers. One of his social needs is that we keep him in different groupings away from his older brothers. So when we do team, T team things, he's not with his siblings. He's with his cousins. This is just a really helpful vehicle in which to plan so that you're meeting the needs of the kids. So here's just another one. And Jack is six. Jack is kind of thinking about God, but we don't know, and his parents don't know exactly if he's made a commitment to Christ. So a spiritual need for Jack might be that he would understand the gospel clearly, and that if it's appropriate, and we don't push the kids, but we do give them an opportunity to ask Christ into their life if they never have before. And perhaps we can talk about that in a few minutes, but that has been one of the most surprising and natural things that we have seen happen, is different ones of the cousins actually come to know Jesus for the first time at camp. But back to your question, I think it's really helpful to think through the needs of the particular individual children coming, and then you shape the program to meet those needs.
Yeah. Now, I'm sure that for most parents, for most parents, this is an exciting idea. But what if you do have extended family who are not really sold on this idea? How would you respond to that?
Yeah. You know, bottom line, families are messy, as we all know, and there is no perfect family out there. And I think, again, this is going to depend on your relationship with your adult children. You may have two of your own adult children who don't particularly get along, and they don't really care to have a family reunion. But what we have found, and others have found, Gary, is often it takes the next generation to bring about healing to a family. So perhaps you have a couple of kids who don't particularly get along, but they are interested in their children, their cousins, knowing each other. And so that's one of the reasons that we don't have the parents. There are many reasons we don't, but we want this to be centered on the cousins knowing each other. So I think you approach it just gently and full of grace and say, hey, you know, we would love to have all of our grandchildren together this summer for 3 days. Would you be willing to let yours come? And they may be hesitant, they may be cautious, but I think by and large, they are willing for their children to come and meet their cousins.
Yeah, I would think that that would be the case. How do you manage your own expectations?
That's a great question, because really, you're going to have expectations. We're all going to have expectations, and we're going to have to throw out a lot of them. I'll give you one very specific one. John and I, when we first started this, had this expectation, oh, this is going to be so great for our relationship with our grandkids. We're going to have these deep, individual, really personal talks with each of the grandchildren. That never happened, because the kids were far more interested in being with each other than in talking to their grandparents. And we quickly realized that that was an unrealistic expectation, and it really shouldn't be one of the goals. There are other times in the year when we are with the individual families that we can focus on the child. This particular time is a time to build the cousins into each other, not necessarily to build them into us. Now, it doesn't mean that that doesn't happen, but that's not the goal. So we had to let that expectation go really quickly.
I can see that, because we have idealistic things in mind, and then we get in the middle of it and realize, this is not realistic.
Yes, this is true. I'll tell you another very funny one really quickly. I cleaned my house before the first camp. It was perfect. It was spotless. I had flowers everywhere. I called my friend Elaine and said, come look at my house. It's perfect. I wanted to impress my adult children when they dropped their kids off. I wanted the campers to notice it. She came down and she oohed and aahed. We girls need other women to ooh and aah. And then the kids arrived, and the mud and the backpacks and the shoes and the sleeping bags all over the floor, and my house was trashed within 10 minutes. Nobody noticed how clean it was. Nobody noticed the flowers. It was an unrealistic expectation. And I called my friend Elaine and said, you have to come back over and look at this mess. And she did, and we both laughed. But right then, I had to let go of the expectation that I will have a clean house. I had to ask the question, do I want a clean house, or do I want happy kids? And happy kids won out. So never again, guys, did I clean my house before camp.
Clean your house after camp.
This is true. And that takes weeks.
Now, you implemented the buddy system at Cousin Camp. Why did you do that? And how did you select the buddies?
Well, the one word answer to that was desperation. We realized that we could not fill each individual child's water bottle. We could not help each individual child with their buffet meals on paper plates. We could not help them with their journals. And we thought, wow, this is a real opportunity to build cousins into one another, which, as I mentioned, is one of our goals. So after the first year of camp, we then began the buddy system, and we assigned an older cousin to a younger cousin. It's never siblings. We try to separate siblings in the buddy system. But the bigger kids are assigned a younger buddy. And their job with the younger buddy is, for example, when the kids all first get here, they have goodie bags, and in the goodie bag is a very inexpensive water bottle with their name magic markered on it with a top that doesn't come apart, and they take their water bottle, which is a part of some other items in the goodie bag, to a specific bathroom, and they pull out the stool, and they fill their water bottle. Can you imagine if I had 12 kids asking me to get them a glass of water at my kitchen sink? You know, it would be chaos. So it was just a very practical means of solving a problem that had the greater benefit of building kids into one another. So the big buddies sit with the little kid, their little buddy, during Bible study. They help the little buddy during all the meals. They help them get their water bottles. They help them find lost shoes and socks. They are to be an encouragement. And I think this has been one of the biggest surprises to both me and my husband about camp is the popularity of the buddy system. Inevitably, every spring, I'll get a phone call from one of the grandchildren saying, who's going to be my buddy this year? Can so-and-so be my buddy? And it's just been precious. They love the buddy system.
Yeah, I can see that. And it's teaching the older kids also the whole concept of serving somebody. So, yeah.
It is.
That's good.
It
I
is.
Like
There's
that.
A lot of benefits to a buddy system.
Let's talk about the spiritual part of the camp, because I understand you have a Bible study time, and so you've got all these different ages and different attention spans. How does that work?
Well, we do have a Bible study time every morning, and one of the things we did the first year at camp, which we've continued every year, is when you come to camp, one of the things that you get in your arrival goodie bag is a blank journal with a photograph of you of the camper that I've gotten from the parent and glued on the top. And this is your camp journal. And these journals live at camp. They don't go home, because if they went home, they'd get lost. So they live at our house. And each year the kids come back and they can pull out their journal from 10 years ago and laugh at how funny their handwriting was or the picture they drew. But the journals are presented the first morning of camp at our very first Bible study. So it's sort of like a rite of passage. This is exciting. Bible studies are short. They're about 20 minutes. The first thing we do is we just share about how to know Jesus. And if we have an older child who is certain about their experience of coming to Christ, we have them tell it. And we say, Caroline, would you tell the story, which we call a testimony of how you first asked Jesus into your heart? And she tells the story. And then someone else tells the story. My husband just asked matter-of-factly, if you would like to ask Christ into your life, this is a great place to do it. And if you would like someone to do it with you, who would you like to do it with you? And it's been funny over the years as the older cousins buy, they raise their hands. They want to be the one to be asked to pray the prayer with the little cousin. And so you see, what you see here is positive peer pressure at work. And each year, the first day of Bible study, we go again and we retell our testimonies. And also, they're written down in their journals. So, for example, you have a four-year-old or a five-year-old who comes to camp and they ask Christ into their life. Their big buddy, if they can't write well, helps them write down what they have done. or perhaps they did it somewhere else, at church or some other place. It's written down in their journal. Now, let me quickly say, I know that this is just one step. We're going to have kids that maybe walk away, that have doubts, and there'll be many times of recommitment. But this is a first step, and this is how we see it, is this is a first step. So in my book, I actually have written just a very simple plan of salvation that you can just take and use to share the gospel, because one of the things that's awkward is, how do I do it? You know, what do I say? I don't want to push this child. I don't want to manipulate this child. So how do I do it? So I have a whole plan in the book. And then we also have what we call an assurance sheet that we have developed, which is just one sheet of what happens when Christ comes into your life. And we print that out and we glue that into the back of every child's journal. So they will have that for the rest of their life. And it's, again, it's just assurance. But one of the interesting things that we have seen is, one, how much easier it is in many cases for grandparents to talk to their kids like this. It doesn't feel awkward. And this is just a blessing of being a grandparent, is grandparents have the freedom to say things that if a parent said it, you might get a, oh, roll of the eye, or an, oh, really? You know, we aren't as likely to get the, oh, roll of the eye, or mom, this, do I have to do this? Because the kids have basically been trained to be polite. Now, that doesn't mean they're always polite. But we have a greater freedom, and it can be very natural. That's been an unanticipated expectation that we have discovered is the freedom that grandparents have. So each day we have a small Bible study. It only lasts, as I mentioned, about 20 minutes. Often we study a character because characters are easier to remember. And many times as the kids get bigger, one of the keys in having a successful Bible study is involving the children, picking one of the grandchildren to read the scripture, one of the grandchildren to lead it. So I think one of the things we're always thinking as we raise our kids and now our grandkids is turning over the leadership. We're wanting to reproduce. We're wanting to turn it over to them. Whereas we have them step up front and we step back.
Yeah.
And you'll get some hysterical responses. We were talking about the fruit of the Spirit at one camp, and one of my four-year-old grandsons insisted that watermelon was a fruit of the Spirit.
I know some people that might agree with him.
This is right. So you want to have a lot of laughter.
Yeah. Susan, what would you say to grandparents who maybe have a son or daughter who's married? All right, and maybe them or maybe their spouse says, well, now, I'm fine for them to come over there, but I don't want you to do the religious stuff with them.
That's a really good question. You know, you would just say, you know, I just want to reassure you, one, this is a part of the daily schedule. It's 20 minutes, and your child needs to be there because everybody's there, but your child does not have to say anything or do anything. We are not going to put your child in an awkward position. If he wants to just sit in the chair and listen, that's fine. You know, you can continue this conversation if your children are coming from a completely different basis or have no faith. Just say, you know, son, I know you want your kids to be exposed to everything in this world that's good, that's healthy. And this is good and it's healthy, and they're going to be exposed somewhere. So it may as well be in a safe environment with people who love them. But I want to reassure you, we're not going to push your son. We're not going to coerce him. We just want him to be a part.
Yeah.
And so I think often the parents have in their heads fixated fears that are simply not real. And what will happen is that child will come, and you do have them come because we all participate in everything. And so it's just kind of across the board. And they sit there, and by the end of the 3 days, they've really warmed up.
Yeah. And go home and tell their parents how much fun they had, typically.
That's right.
Has this whole thing of Cousin Camp stretched you as a grandparent and your husband in some ways?
Oh, yes. We've had to depend on the Lord in a lot of ways. We have seen so many of our own expectations, you know, dashed. But I think one thing that we have seen, and we saw this as parents too, but I think it's true for parents and grandparents. I think if we're really honest, all of us who are parents or grandparents will feel like many times we have ruined our kids. Many times I felt raising my kids, oh, no, I've ruined this child or I've ruined this grandchild. And it's really important to remember that our ability to ruin our child is not nearly as great as God's power to redeem him. Mm-hmm. And I actually wrote that phrase out and put it on my desk. My ability to ruin this child is not nearly as great as God's power to redeem him. So God knows we're not perfect. God knows we make messes, and we will, and we will have to go and ask for forgiveness. But our God is a God who redeems.
Yes.
And our God takes the little seeds that are being sown, and he's the one that nurtures them. And so we pray, Lord, just wipe away anything that was said or done that wasn't of you, and grow those seeds that were of you.
Yeah.
So, yes, it stretches us as grandparents because it's just like being a parent all over again.
Yeah.
Yet with, you know, a different season.
What are some of the things that that maybe you've learned? Maybe some things you look back and found that, well, that didn't really work that well, and some other things that maybe did work well in the cousin camp.
Yeah. Well, one of the really silly things we do is we have a whipped cream fight. You get those free, you know, when you stay in a hotel, you get those little shower cap things that you never use. Mm-hmm. But I collect them, and I save them for cousin camp. And we put shower caps on the children. And the first year that we were going to have this great whipped cream fight, I used shaving cream. Big mistake. It stank. It stung. It was horrible. The kids were so grossed out. The next year, we switched to really nice-tasting whipping cream.
Oh, yes.
So that was just a little kind of fun, crazy thing. Another thing that we have learned is my tendency is to overplan. And so you do need to have a big plan, but you quickly learn you have to be willing to throw out. And you have to ask, is this what we had planned going to make a difference? Is it really necessary, or do we need to throw it out for downtime? Because kids need some downtime, particularly when you have a lot of grandchildren. They need, so we have, in every afternoon, we have a rest hour. The four-year-olds often fall asleep, but everybody just needs some downtime. That introvert teenager who's 14 really needs to go and curl up with a book by himself. So we have an hour that's just downtime or rest time, where you're just by yourself and you can read, you can do anything you want. And one of the things, too, you don't learn it all right off the get-go. This is why every year you're thinking needs and goals. One of the things that one of my children, my daughter-in-law, introduced several years into camp, she said, look, what if we each bring a workbook that we know each of our children would like and slip them to you, and you give those out the first day during rest time? And they can use those. And I thought, that is brilliant, because they know their kids. And rest time can kind of have a bad connotation. And yet, so the first day, when they drop the kids off at camp, they slip these bags of their rest time activities to me, and I hide them under my bed, and then I bring them out at the first rest time. That, again, has been something that's evolved. It's been wonderful. The kids
love
that.
Yeah, I like that idea.
I have a theological question, though. Can you put some of that whipped cream on the fruit of the Spirit?
That might be really good. I think that would make the Lord chuckle.
Well, Susan, you send a questionnaire to each of the parents of your grandchildren before family camp. Why do you do that, and what are you trying to find out from them?
Well, Gary, actually, I have to credit you with this, and you don't even know this, but we raised our kids on the five love languages. That has really helped our marriage, and it's helped our relationship with our children. And one of the things I realized is we don't necessarily know all of our kids, our grandkids in particular's love language. So we send out a questionnaire to the children's parents. And again, we didn't do this the first few years. This was something we grew into. So I really want our listeners to know that you grow into camp. You don't do it all right the first year. You never do it all right, but you grow into it. So we would have a grandchild who's, say, 7 that we haven't seen in 9 months because he lived so far away. So we had a real need to know, okay, what's going on in this child's life? does this child, is he into technology? Is he into music? Is he into sports? Is he sensitive? Mm-hmm. What are his fears? Where does he blossom? How is he packaged? Really, what I'm asking is, what are his love languages? Mm-hmm. And how can we cater to those love languages? So a parent writes us back and says, Yates really is a helper. He likes to come alongside. He will blossom if you ask him to help with things. Now, yeah. I wouldn't have known that. Mm. Or we may have another child who really likes to organize. A parent may say, Tobin really likes to organize, and he's really athletic, and he would love to organize a ping pong tournament. Mm. So what we are doing is we're sort of getting a cliff notes from the parents on what are your child's gifts, love languages, where do you see them blossom, what might be fears they might have. Give us a cheat sheet, so to speak, so that we can play to their strengths. So that's why we do it, and those are some of the questions we ask.
That's great. You interviewed lots of other people when you were writing this book. What did you learn from others in terms of different types of family reunions? Maybe not exactly a cousin's camp, but family reunions.
Yeah. Well, you know, God created us for relationship. And we long to be in close relationship with our families. And yet it can be really hard. And so here, again, you go back to the question, what would work for my particular family? So let me give you a couple of snapshots. Sarah, my friend Sarah, comes from a painful family. And yet she longed for her cousins, her adult cousins and their children, to know each other, which they really didn't know each other. And some were people of faith and some were not people of faith. So she decided the best thing to do was to play to what they did have in common, which was military backgrounds. Many of her extended family had been in the military. So she planned a day-long, and it may have been an overnight, I can't remember, extended family reunion, and she incorporated a military theme. Mm. Each person received an invitation to Mission Impossible, Band of Cousins. And on the cover of the invitation was a World War II photo of her grandfather with his two brothers. They were triplets on a tank serving in World War II. And everybody came dressed to the reunion in camo, and the activities had different battle themes. And she put together a memory booklet for all of these cousins. Mm. And they had medals. So she played to the one thing that her family had in common, which was really special.
Yeah.
Another family, I have to tell the story of a friend of mine who is actually a single gal. She lives in the UK, and she's in her late 40s, and she's not married, but she has a passion for her nieces and nephews and also for some neighborhood children, and she wants to make a difference in their lives. So she has what she calls a farm camp each summer. She has some sheep, some hens, and she has the kids together for 3 days and teaches them all about farm life and how to care for animals and how to help clean out messes that hens make. And she is giving, one, the parents a break, but she's also bonding these children, and she's teaching them about ecology and farm life and organic eating. So I think the point here is there is a variety of ways that you can do this. Another family we know decided they have 6 grandchildren, and they didn't want, they're little, and they didn't want to have them all at once. So they decided to start small, which is also always a good idea. And they decided to have just the 3 little girl cousins for a 24-hour overnight. Now, this family happens to live in the same town with all their kids, but just because you live in the same town doesn't mean you actually get that much time together because everybody's lives are so scheduled. So they took these 3 little girls out to a cottage in the country that they had and had them for 24 hours without the parents. Mm. And they were thrilled. It was just the right amount of time. The little girls did things from doing manicures and pedicures, even on their grandfather, which he's still ridiculed for. But so there's a whole, I tell about 14 or 15 stories of different people and their different ways of doing things.
Yeah. You know, Susan, what about the grandparent who's listening and saying, oh, man, these are great ideas, but we're not physically able to do anything like this. what would you say to those grandparents?
The last chapter in my book, which I think is really the most important, is there's one thing you can't fail at. Again, you know, we all feel like failures in this parenting business, but the one thing you can't fail at is prayer. And I give just an outline of how to pray for your family and how to pray for your children and your grandchildren. And I share just the personal prayers that I have prayed over the years for my kids. So every grandparent can make a difference by praying. It's one thing that you can do that makes a real difference. Another thing that grandparents can do that maybe perhaps can't physically run a camp is that they can write notes. One of the things that I am not good at shopping or buying gifts, and with 21 grandchildren, I don't even try. One of the things that my husband and I do each birthday is we each write a handwritten note to that child on their birthday. Mm-hmm. And we just share things of like what's going on in the world, what God has been teaching us, what's happened in the year, and what we're praying for them. And then the parents save these letters in a box. And the hope is that one day, this is a great idea to do in today's world, but one day their grandchildren, our grandchildren's grandchildren, will have a firsthand account of the crazy year of 2020 from a grandparent.
Yeah.
You can write letters. The other thing you can do is bring in helpers to help you run a camp like this. If you aren't physically able to do it, go to your church and ask if there's some young people on the youth staff who would come in and help you. One of the things I've done in this book, because I know all of these ideas can sound overwhelming, and so often we read a practical book and we get to the end of a book and we feel like, oh my goodness, I've just been drinking from a fire hydrant and I'm too overwhelmed to do anything. So the most unique thing about this book is I have put a chapter right in the middle. It's chapter 5 that is your working chapter. So what you do is you read the first part of the book, and then you begin to sketch out responding to specific questions that I have asked you and left blank white paper for you in this chapter to fill out, a design for your camp. And then as you read the rest of the book, you can pick out ideas and circle them and go back and insert them into chapter 5. So that what happens is at the end of the read of the book, you have your basic outline for your camp. And that really keeps you from being overwhelmed.
Well, Susan, this has been a great discussion. I can see parents getting excited about it, if the grandparent is. Obviously, the grandparent has to take the initiative. But I think you've given a really workable tool here to grandparents who would like to do something meaningful for their grandchildren. So thanks for spending time to do this and share this idea with others. And thanks for being with us today on Building Relationships.
Oh, thank you so much for having me, and thank you all for all the work that you do in building strong families.
Well, what a treat to have Susan Alexander Yates with us today. And if you go to 5lovelanguages.com, you'll see that featured resource, her book, Cousin Camp, A Grandparent's Guide to Creating Fun, Faith, and Memories That Last. I think it'll be an encouragement to you. And for the free ebook, Camp at Home, that she talked about, go to her website, SusanAlexanderYates.com.
Next week, we'll begin our summer highlights from this past year. And our first conversation will be about teens and smartphones.
Don't miss the practical information and guidance. A big thank you today to our production team, Steve Wick and Janice Todd. Building Relationships with Dr. Gary Chapman is a production of Moody Radio in association with Moody Publishers, a ministry of Moody Bible Institute. Thanks for listening.